It's okay, everybody. We now have two wardens back in the building. Everything's okay. I don't know if you heard, but the Archbishop of Canterbury got a call in early September from the directors of KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken. And they phoned him up and they said to him, Archbishop Justin, we would like to give a huge donation to the Church of England. We know that you need it. And Archbishop Justin said, well, that's a bit irregular, but what do you have in mind? They said, we'd like to give you hundreds of thousands of pounds. I'm not sure quite how much yet. Hundreds of thousands of pounds. All you have to do in exchange is change the words of the Lord's Prayer. And change it from, give us this day our daily bread, and change it to, give us this day our daily chicken. That's all you have to do. Justin said, that's just ridiculous. And he put the phone down. A couple of weeks later, he gets another phone call. He said, we're thinking in terms of millions of pounds now, Archbishop. All you have to do, change the words of the Lord's Prayer from give us this day our daily bread to give us this day our daily chicken, and we will give you millions of pounds. Justin put the phone down and said, that's just ridiculous. Well, in early October, another phone call came. KFC. Justin said, I've told you twice already. We just simply can't do this. And they said to him, Archbishop Justin, we will give you £5 billion if you will change the words of the Lord's Prayer from give us this day our daily bread to give us this day our daily chicken. Archbishop was a little bit uncertain. He took it into prayer as you would as the Archbishop. And then, at the very end of October, you might not have heard this announcement yet, he stands in front of General Synod, and he says, ladies and gentlemen, I have some good news and some bad news. The good news is we're about to get a donation of £5 billion. The bad news, we're about to lose the Horvitz account. Okay, it didn't really happen, but it's good, eh? We're coming to the third part of our series that we've been traveling through October with. We've been looking at the start of October at the whole area of talents. We looked at the whole area of time. This morning we're looking at treasure, that whole area of giving. The first point where we encounter giving in the Bible is Genesis chapter 4, and it's an incredibly problematic piece of narrative. Cain and Abel is our first point of Christian giving. Abel brings an animal offering before the Lord. Cain brings an offering of vegetables before the Lord. Genesis chapter 4 says that Abel's offering was acceptable to the Lord, but Cain's was not. And that particular incident sparks fury in the heart of Cain, which ultimately ends up in Cain killing Abel. But we don't know why. The Old Testament doesn't give us any clues whatsoever as to why Abel's gift was acceptable to the Lord, and yet Cain's gift was not acceptable to the Lord. So we have to park that there, and we'll return to that little mystery at the end. The Old Testament gives us no clues whatsoever into exactly what's going on. The first five books of the Bible, the Pentateuch, the place in which we encounter all the rules on giving presented to us in the Bible. They're there even before we leave the fifth book of the Old Testament. There are basically four forms of Christian giving. The first form is called tithing. It is the idea that we give a 10% of our income and we give it to the Lord. How it would have worked in the Old Testament is this. There were 12 tribes of Israel. One of those tribes were designated as priests, looking after the temple, looking after the sacrifice, looking after acts of worship. The other 11 tribes would take 10% of their income, and of course, in this point in history, all shapes and forms. It wouldn't have just have been money. It would have been food. It would have been livestock. It would take 10% of their income, and they would give their 10% to the Levites. So they lived on the 90%. The Levites lived on the 110%. The concept of tithing introduced pretty much at the start of the Bible in Leviticus chapter 27. There is an argument that suggests that this was a form of Old Testament taxation, and we're taxed by our government. They were taxed by their government. Doesn't quite work like that. This was a tax that they brought to the temple. This was their offering brought before God. We know this because there were times when they were taken into exile into Babylon and into Assyria. And by the time that Jesus sets foot on the planet, they are being held under the authority of Rome. So at that point, they're paying their taxes to Caesar. You'll remember Jesus talking about that. And at the same time, they're still bringing their tithes and offerings to the temple. So the concept of giving 10% of our income to the Lord runs quite deep and has traveled through an awful lot of history. In fact, at the point when the Jews decided not to do it, God got rather strong with them. He says this in Malachi 3 verse 8, "You have robbed me." And they said, "How have we robbed you?" And God says, "By not paying your tithes and offerings." So, first form of giving, tithing. There are two men shipwrecked on a desert island. One of them is running around frantic. He thinks, "We're never going to get saved. We're going to die here. What will we do? I'll never see my wife. I'll never see my children again. What will we do?" The other man is sat quietly on the beach, enjoying the sun. The one man continues to run around the island screaming and shouting and say, "What will we do? What will we do? Why aren't you panicking?" The man who is sat on the beach enjoying the sun says, "Well, because I am a millionaire." But the other man says, "Well, your money's not going to help you now, is it?" He says, "It will. I'm also a Christian and I pay my tithe. I promise you, my vicar will find me." Tithing. Second concept is that of something called first fruits. It's an interesting one. We have just a remainder of that embedded in what we call our harvest or our Thanksgiving service. It is the idea that we bring the first of our crops and we bring them before the Lord. First of our crops, first of our livestock is all brought in the Old Testament world, and it's brought and placed before God. So the second one, first fruits. Third one, special offerings. Special offerings, we see them being taken up in Exodus to construct the tabernacle. We see it again in 1 Kings for the construction of the temple. The curious and wonderful thing about both those accounts is in the Exodus account, Moses had to say, "Please, can you stop giving now? We have more than we can possibly cope with." Well, that would be a lovely state of affairs to find yourself in, wouldn't it? The pattern is repeated in 1 Kings with Solomon, who says, "Stop, that we have enough to build the grandest temple the world has ever seen. You can stop giving now." Fourth area, already touched on this morning, giving to the poor and to the needy. The poor, the widows, the orphans, they are priority throughout the Bible. From the beginning of the Old Testament right away through to the end of the book of Revelation, a huge emphasis on giving to the poor, to the widow, to the orphans, to the needy, to the lost, to the homeless runs right away through the heart of the Bible. Exodus 22, Proverbs 13, Isaiah 10, Jeremiah 5, Ezekiel 16, Amos 2, Zechariah 7, Malachi 3, the reading from James that we heard today. Again and again, God reminds us about the priority of giving to the needy, the poor, the lost. But it's all summed up for me wonderfully in the first epistle that John writes, chapter 3, 17. He says this: "If anyone has material possessions and he sees a brother or sister in need but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person?" So four principles all found within the first five books of the Old Testament. Now, on the whole, the Israelites were pretty good at it. On the whole, they were pretty good at keeping those four principles. They were able to give to the poor and to the needy. They understood the concept of first fruits. They paid their tithes and offerings, and they responded well to special offerings. Yet God is not happy with them. Again and again, God's wrath burns against the Israelites. Again and again, he's angry with them. Why? He says this: you give your offerings, you bring your gifts, but your hearts are far from me. So God doesn't just require us to obey a certain set of rules. He actually wants us to do it out of our hearts, not out of some odd legal obligation. So we give because our heart's desire is to give. Our heart attitude is so incredibly important. The heart behind the gift. We see this really rather clearly in Luke chapter 21. This is the story of the widow's mite. When I saw this picture, it did occur to me that she's not going to be a widow for long. But it's a very famous oil painting called The Widow's Mite. Luke chapter 21, the widow's mite. She gave out of what she had. The rich man gave, and he gave out of what he could spare. But she gave all that she had. There's a massive difference. Now, when you do the calculation, what he gave is considerably more than what she gave. But God says he gave what he could spare. She gave everything she had. You see the difference. This is a response according to the law. So as far as the temple is concerned, he has ticked the box. He has brought his tithe. Well done him. As far as God is concerned, this is his good and faithful servant. She has given all that she had, and God says, Jesus says, she will be rewarded abundantly for what she has brought. Why? Because it's about the heart. It's got to be about the heart. C.S. Lewis said, Christian giving is about more than giving what we could easily do without. Christian giving is about more than giving what we could easily do without. Sacrificial giving should be the natural domain of the mature follower of Jesus. It should be as natural to us as breathing. Giving should be as natural to us as breathing. It's lunchtime. Church has finished. The family sit around enjoying their meal. The father is complaining. He said the music was too loud. The sermon was too long. The coffee was too cold. His little girl piped up, yes, Dad, but still pretty good value for the 10p you placed in the offering bowl. But this is all Old Testament stuff. And we are not Jews. We're Christians. We're followers of Jesus. And so when it comes to the rules presented to us in the Old Testament, we have to again and again ask ourselves some very clear questions. And we'll grapple with this again and again. We have to ask ourselves, in relation to the laws presented to us in the Old Testament, are these things which Jesus condemns, or are these things which Jesus tells us that we ought to embrace? And if we look through that set of rules in the Old Testament, we will find both categories. In regards to all those strange and wonderful food laws about which animals are clean and which animals are not clean, well, Jesus makes it very clear. It's actually what comes from inside out that makes us unclean, not what comes from the outside in. So he certainly doesn't embrace the food laws. The rules regarding the Sabbath has to be a strict point, and we have to obey all those rules regarding the Sabbath. And Jesus says, oh, no, you've misunderstood. The Sabbath was created for man, not man for the Sabbath. So Sabbath is there to help us to ensure that we take some time off or we will fall over and die. So the Sabbath is created to help us understand the concept of rest. And so that's not something Jesus embraces either. But when it comes to this idea of tithing and first fruits and giving to the poor and needy and special offerings, Jesus is very clear. He says, I want you to do over and above what the Pharisees do. So he says, not only do I want you to keep these rules, I want you to go further than them. Now, what is the further? Well, we're trying to point to that. The man who gives out of his wealth is given from a Pharisaical spirit. He's obeying the rules. The widow who gives out of her little is living according to her heart. So when Jesus says, I want you to do over and above that which the Pharisees do, he said, I want you to do what they do, but I want you to do it not out of rule, obligation, and law. I want you to do it out of heart, a desire to be motivated by our heart. Some of you heard my story before when I was in theological college. Went when I was 19 years of age. No money whatsoever, with parents who weren't followers of Jesus, so they didn't quite understand that they needed to support me a little. And so I went in trusting God, because that's what you had to do. And in those days, theological education was cheap. £9,000 would get me through 3 years. So I had to find my £9,000, and I certainly didn't have £9,000, didn't have any income. The theological education at that point, the government weren't giving grants to that thing because it wasn't a proper degree. These people who go into the church, that's simply, well, what are they thinking of? My parents shared that same view. And so I need to find £9,000. So I'm in one of those wonderful Pentecostal style theological colleges where if you haven't learned the disciplines of faith and trusting God, then you fail the course anyway. They outwork that in this way. If you haven't paid off the £9,000 on the end of the third year, you do not get to graduate. So yeah, you have to pay off the fees or you don't graduate. So I did what I could. There was certainly no way I could do anything that would gain me £9,000. So I did what I could. I got my job in Mrs. O'Connor Fenton's field. I would scoop up horse poo most mornings. And for the privilege of scooping up horse poo most mornings, Mrs. O'Connor Fenton would pay me the grand sum of £10 a week. She didn't do it out of the right heart. Barry at the post office would laugh at me when I would pop in on my way to sort out the horses, and he would say to me, you're going shoveling horse, are you? Took me a little while to work out what he was actually saying. Wasn't funny. But I did that for pretty much most of the 3 years, and it just kept me in toiletries and the likes. Last day of a term, graduation day. There's a great big marquee being set up in the field. Everybody's been invited to come to it. My mum's going to come up and watch it. That's a big event, by the way. This is North Yorkshire. She's going to come all the way from Wales. And Welsh people, they don't like to leave the valley. Going to come all the way up and watch this event taking place. But I haven't paid off the fees. I'm not far off. I'm just under £1,000 left, not far off, but I haven't got there. And so it's the last day. The principal comes to see me and he says, it's not coming. No. He says, sorry. Not your fault. And I don't know what to do. I'm wandering around watching what's going on. The students are putting on drama shows for the people visiting and there's music happening. And then the principal comes to find me. Puts his hand on my shoulder. He says, Mark, just got a call from somebody. They've paid off the end bit for you. I still, to this day, have no idea who did it. Still to this day, have no idea who paid off the thing. And all I was able to do was to give out of the little that I had. I gave out of my poverty and God gave to me out of his abundance. And that's how Christian giving works. So I gave what I had. And what I had really wasn't much. And so God gave to me out of his abundance. And what he had was rather considerable. God gave to me out of his abundance. And he's met us ever since. Rianne despairs of my ability with money. Money. Because God has always provided. There has never been a point where he hasn't. And so convinced that God will always provide, I don't really have a problem with this whole area of Christian giving. I really have caught the idea that it all belongs to God anyway. And he lets me keep an awful lot of it. So I work from that basis. And so I've learned that if I give out of my poverty, he who owns the cattle on a thousand hills will give out of his abundance. That very last day was a little bit stressful, though. So our ability to be generous, even with the little, allows God to pour out to us from his abundance. And 2 Corinthians 9:7 says that God loves the cheerful giver. See, all these verses, again and again and again, are simply reinforcing one thing. It's all about the heart. The New Testament makes it clear to us. It's about the heart. So we tithe. We give away 10% of our income, and we give it back. We do first fruits. And how first fruits works for some of us is if we get a bonus in work, we give some of that. If I write a new book and I get an advance on it, we give away some of that. So first fruits is the giving away of something which was unexpected and suddenly arrives. It enables us to give away. We give to special projects. And we're able to sit in this, and it hasn't let me down today, this warm, cozy building. Phew, that was lucky, wasn't it? In this lovely, warm, cozy building, because of special offerings. We gave to this, and we were able to reorder and refurbish St. Michael's. And yet again last night, with Daughters of Davis, the band playing from here, I was able to look around and see that, yes, this is what we were trying to achieve. A building where we can do all sorts of things like this. And some of the naughty villagers out there are still of the opinion that he's modernized the church. We've modernized nothing. What we've done is we've made it more medieval than it ever was. Cleared out all that Victorian tat and reestablished a medieval church. It always has been the center of community activity. That's what St. Michael's has been since they built it. And we restored it to that hub of community life. And it feels wonderful. To watch 150 kids wander back down the path on Friday nights and teenagers coming up on their way to do that. And it's just wonderful to see that, because that's what this was built for. The community hub. And I think we've done a good job. Well done, everybody, on this. But also we give to the widows and orphans. And we talked a little bit about harvest and the offerings that were brought in at harvest time throughout the Warfield Church. We gave them all away. So all the food that came in went to the food bank. But for St. Michael's, the financial gifts that came in on Harvest Sunday, we sent to South Africa to a YWAM project to stop the traffic. And that's what we do and will continue to do. And we have mission partners in Nepal. We have mission partners in South Sudan. We have mission partners in Vancouver. We have mission partners in South Africa. We have mission partners all over the world. And we're working because we don't ever want to become a church that thinks our task is to have huge reserves. The vicar who follows me many decades from now, and that was a threat, is not going to inherit a large bank balance. I promise that. Because as it comes in, we will give it out, because that's what's supposed to happen. And the moment we actually lock it all down and try and preserve and conserve, it'll all disappear. And so we have to become a community where it just flows through. In flows out, in it flows out. And that's what we need to do again and again. Across our world, yes. Across our nation, yes. And across our community as well. Our ability to be missional here is what allows all the rest to work. So all the bits have to work together. Did I mention at any point that it's all about the heart? It's not about our ability to keep the rules. It's about our desire to let it flow from our hearts. So we are confident that we'll never be a rich church in terms of our bank balance, because we always want to let it flow through us and out to others. Last year, the £43,000 went to overseas mission. And next year, we want to be able to give £20,000 to the diocese to outwork what they're doing, because there's plenty of parishes that can't afford a vicar. And we can help and enable that. So next year, we plan to give away £63,000 to make mission happen nationally and internationally. The year after, we want to move towards £100,000. We want to do that because that's what God has called us to do. Oh, let me end our tour. I'm an awfully long way from where we started in Genesis 4 with Cain and Abel, because the Bible is quite tricky sometimes, and it's left us wait thousands and thousands and thousands of years before it gets us to the solution. And it's not until we move into Hebrews 11 that we find the solution to the Cain and Abel issue. And Hebrews 11 is quite straightforward. Cain's gift was rejected because he gave with the wrong heart. Nothing to do with the fact that Abel's given a cow and Cain is given a cucumber or whatever. It's nothing to do with meats and vegetables. It's everything to do with the heart. We wait until Hebrews 11 before we eventually discover that. So where are we at? At present, our monthly expenditure is about £45,000. Just to keep this thing on the road, £45,000 needs to come in every single month. The way that we do church is jolly expensive. So the way we do it, meeting in multiple locations throughout Warfield and North Bracknell, is quite an expensive way to do church. However, in terms of missional ability, that is our ability to connect people with Jesus, is an incredibly effective model. Taking a localized expression of Jesus and placing him into each and every community that we encounter is an incredibly effective way to do mission. So we will do it the expensive way, because that's the best way that we can find to outwork God's vision for us. Now, we would like to, into 2016, generate another £50,000 on top of what comes in at the moment to rise to the challenges that we're going to face in 2016. Woodhurst Park is growing around us, and there's a whole pile of other things that we have an opportunity to rise towards. And we can do that. So we have to get quite a way past the £500,000 figure in our income next year. Now, it's not difficult. All it requires is for every individual member to pay an extra £240 in 2016. So we're looking now. Now, some of you might think that's a large figure to reach. Well, we're back here, aren't we? It's about the widow's mite. It's about our ability to give sacrificially, even if we can't give much. It's all about the heart, really. So what are we suggesting? We're suggesting that we walk towards a pattern of tithing. We walk towards a pattern of 10%. Now, we walk towards it. Some of you will say, we can't do that, but we can do 2%. Okay. Some of you will say, actually, we can only do the £20 a month that you're talking about. Okay. It's not rules and regulations. It's a desire to respond from our hearts. Might be a big jump to jump in at 10, but we start somewhere. We get ourselves on the first rung of the ladder, and as God blesses our giving, then we take the next step of the ladder. And the curious, it's only in relation to this one issue does God say, test me in this. It's only in regards to this one issue, the whole issue of finance. Test me in this. So give to me and see that if I don't give to you, push down and running over. Just this one area. It's not curious. And so God is so adamant with that promise that if you give to him, he'll give to you. Then I'm saying to you, hey, even if it just means starting at 2%, then see what God does in pouring back in. And as he pours back in, you might take your 2% and make it a 3%. So we get on the ladder and we begin to move forward. Now we should all have received over the course of the last week a letter from me with some more information on this and some forms that can be filled in response to this. So that's all there. If you haven't received one, we'll make sure we get some pens and paper at the back for future services, because clearly something's gone a bit wrong. So we need to be able to get information to you. Because it's important to have our database working properly. The next part of that is a pay by standing order. It's really quite difficult for a church to budget effectively if we don't know what's going to happen the following month. So if you're paying by standing order, that allows us to budget properly. You know how that works at home. If you don't know what's happening from month to month to month, planning a budget for the year proves quite close to impossible. And finally, gift aid it. Gift aid it means that the government will give us a certain percent back on what you give, and it won't cost you any more. So money from the government. Whoa. I don't know what heart attitude they give with. We're quite happy just to take it, to be honest. And there's our little tour through the world of Christian giving. So this is those four principles. We tithe, we give of our first fruits, we give our special offerings, and we give to the needy, the poor, the homeless. So those are those four areas that we're trying to deal with. But the big thing, the big message I want you to hear is it's about the heart. It's about giving that flows from the heart. So we just close our eyes and pray. Father, speak to our hearts. Let us be bound with one heart, cheerfully given, because we share a vision for connecting people to Jesus. Father, we are so excited about a revelation of the size of our world. It's so small now, and we can do so much in so many places. So, Father, as you increase our vision, we pray you'll also increase the provision. In Jesus' name.
We're going to finish with our final song, just also bring us back to what God has done for us. So Matt and others will lead that, and we'll have a closing prayer.
Right, Key.
Please stand. Greatest day in history, death is beaten, you have rescued me. Sing it out, Jesus is alive. The empty cross, the empty grave,